Welcome to Docs in Orbit, a podcast for international, independent, creative nonfiction filmmakers. This is Christina Zachariadis. Last week brought the close of the 35th edition of IDFA, the largest and arguably most important documentary film festival and marketplace. This year's 12-day event screened 277 titles. Midway through the festival, I had the great chance to catch up with Orwa Nirabia, the artistic director, to discuss this year's festival experience and unpack some of the ideas and notions that were pushed to the foreground. Orwa is a powerful voice in the international documentary film community. Born in Syria, he started his career as an actor and journalist before moving into film production. In 2002, together with his partner and fellow filmmaker Diana Al-Jarodi, they established an independent production company that focused on author-driven documentary cinema. And in 2008, they moved into festival organizing, where he and his partner launched the first documentary film festival in Damascus called DocsBox. DocsBox quickly grew to be the most important documentary film gathering in the Arab world. And just before its fifth edition, in 2012, the festival organizers made a public statement announcing that they will suspend all further editions in protest against the violation of human rights in Syria. Instead, they devised an inverted version of the festival, where instead of bringing international films to Damascus, they advocated for Syrian films to be shown in festivals around the world as an act of solidarity in light of the violence that by then had taken hold in Syria. Just a few months later, Orwa was arrested in Damascus. Alarm over his safety spread, and the international film community came together and successfully petitioned the Syrian government for his release. Now exiled in Europe, Orwa continues advocating for the power of documentary film and the rights of filmmakers. He was appointed artistic director of IDFA in 2018, and this year's edition felt monumental, not only for the sheer number of films on display, but also for the necessary and thought-provoking panel discussions that were platformed, including an examination of the growing prosecution and incarceration of filmmakers around the world, and a bold, critical examination of the power dynamics inherent in film festivals that are designed around exclusivity and competition. All said, it was an impressive offering that gave air to many meaningful exchanges. So without further ado, here's the conversation.
Do you see the little red light?
Yes, I do.
And is the time is moving. Time is moving.
Imagine.
I mean, my whole sense of time has been turned upside down with this festival. I'm
very happy to hear.
Yeah.
That's the plan.
Yeah.
No, that's absolutely the plan. The whole idea of trying to design or imagine a festival where you get lost, but always end up finding something, whether it is what you wanted or not, that's also all right.
Yeah. No, I mean, for me personally, it's been exactly what you say, losing myself in the films, losing my mind with what I'm confronted with, losing my sleep, and then finding my way back through the community and the conversations and the friendships and the solidarity of the audience. So it's been an incredibly moving experience for me. And I'm really honored to be able to have even just like a few moments with you to talk about the festival and how you do this magic.
No, it's a great pleasure. I do follow your podcast. I do listen, and I think you're doing a wonderful thing that's very important. So it's a great pleasure. And lovely to meet you personally, too.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, I think actually I might need to turn you up a little bit. Just a tad. Okay.
Yeah, it's because when my voice went down.
Yeah, it did.
I was...
It's okay. We'll figure it all out.
It's your kind words.
That humbled you?
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So I think I want to just begin by asking how you're doing, because it's a big festival.
Well, thank you for asking. I'm doing well. I'm enjoying a lot of what's happening. I think so much that we imagined should happen is happening, but also there are many other things that I didn't have in mind that make me very happy that the festival is working well, that the efforts of this big team that really worked so hard for a long time are reaching such fruition. And other than that, it is quite a daily schedule. And I think I'm a bit slower than I used to be before the pandemic. So I think the pandemic had an impact on one's energy levels. So this is also good exercise.
Yeah, running around from one talk to the other, and I'm sure, yeah. And the energy of the audience and from the films, it's kind of like fuel a little bit, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm very happy that I'm hearing this from quite a few of our guests who feel like me, like what you are describing, that it is encounters like this with the audience in the film, in the theater, and with colleagues from around the world that you haven't seen for a while, and that this is a very important reminder of why we do this, because I think work in documentary film, whether in any part of documentary film, is generally a true labor of love, because it takes so much effort, so much sleepless nights, and very little reward. And I think we need to have such experiences to... this is our reward. Our reward is being together and with the audience and with beautiful films and thinking together, discussing ideas together. Because otherwise, what's it about, really? I mean, it's not an industry that makes anybody so famous or rich. Mm-hmm. I mean, a few, but very few.
Yeah, and even for those few, it's not their motivation. I would think not. But what you're saying rings true for me, because you watch a film, but it's the discussion. The audience sees a film, but if it's the discussion that happens afterwards from the multiple perspectives, from this international community, right? So somebody coming and seeing a film from Russia, like I'll just say Paradise, for instance, an American watches it, and then somebody from let's say Iran watches it, and then afterwards they talk about it, and to hear the different perspectives on it. That to me is always what's so interesting and important about festivals.
I think that is the job. I just believe that the discussion does not need to be directly always about the film. I think that we watch a film, we take a moment of silence, then whatever we discuss is influenced by what we have watched. And in a way, that's how I understand what I always refer to as the rule of scarcity of festivals, that we are not here to sell millions of tickets, that we're not here to achieve impact in the direct sense that every citizen should watch every film. We're here to say that if the few watch this film, each one of them will go home and will have a discussion with their family. Each one of their family members will go somewhere next morning, work, school, university, and will have a discussion there. And the people they discussed something with will go and discuss with their own. And that's how, within a week or two, it's an entire city in discussion. You see what I mean? So to me, this what you describe is the core business. The chain of discussions, you know, that keeps growing. And that is civic life. And it's not necessarily about the film. For example, you might watch a film about the Netherlands or that takes place in the Netherlands in a context that in no direct way is relevant to you. But then you'll be thinking about the relevance to you. That's how we do it, humans. So you might end up discussing something in your own city because you witnessed this experience in another city that is totally different. You see what I mean? So it's also crossing borders. It's very quantum. It's not linear. And that's why I think we terribly fail when we try to measure by regular tools how many people watched the film, how many discussed the film, because it might be there are films that do not call for a discussion. They call us to just shut up and stay silent for hours after watching. Still, is that not impact? Is that not an not the film doing its what it's trying to do?
Yeah. No, I've had those experiences here too, where I've been completely speechless afterwards.
I'm very happy to hear that.
Well, I'm gonna still try and find my words, but there's you're a legend, Orwell. You really are, and I'm not saying that as a larger in life figure. I'm saying that as a human that's approachable, that has done amazing things in your life, that you've worn many hats: an actor, producer, filmmaker, an activist, a festival director, a culture worker is what you are. No.
I have no idea what I am, and I am still as insecure about what I do as I was when I was 20, and I'm still thinking if I'm in the right place or if I shouldn't change this entire profession on a weekly basis. And I'm truly grateful for your kind words, but of course it is... It's actually the privilege of being able to work, of having the platform to grow, develop, have opinions, and have the privilege of being able to be self-reflective or self-critical is something that I think most of us tend to forget, that this is a privilege and that it needs to be taken seriously and not taken for granted. To me, what we are doing here is a massive privilege to be working in a platform that has so much influence and capacity, in a place where if I have an idea that I really think is good, I have a great team that can actually help me make it happen. I have the resources. I live now in a first world country, and I work for a festival that has relatively an exceptional level of financial stability. So, yeah, it's so much more fear of responsibility that drives one here, not to take the privilege for granted, to try and make it useful. I think that's a word I usually hate, because it refers again to a pragmatist understanding of the world. But yeah, it's the best word I can come up with now.
Yeah, I mean, every festival has its origin story, right? And IDFA has one. It's 35 years that it's been in the making. And I know it is one of the first documentary-focused film festivals, and now it's the largest. I'm wondering what, from its initial reason for being, when you became artistic director, did you find inspiring or something that you wanted to nurture into the future? And what was it that you also wanted to evolve?
I think IDFA is objectively and by far the largest documentary dedicated film festival in the world. Mm-hmm. But that does not mean that it's the best, and that does not mean that it's the only one. And I think, again, size does matter, but it's not the only factor.
Right.
Yeah.
And again, you're against this measurement.
Yeah, I think we have a culture that is deeply, deeply capitalistic, that considers that size and measurability are the objective, mm-hmm. are the what we work for and how we prove our worth. So. The example here that I always find inspiring is we have one of the things that that is now 25 years old at IDFA is the IDFA Fund, now called the IDFA Bertha Fund. The IDFA Fund gives grants now to filmmakers with projects from around the Global South and parts of Eastern Europe in countries where there is no strong subsidy system or state support for arts and culture. Whether the industry is not supportive of independent work. And before that, it also had the capacity, unfortunately not now, not in recent years, to support workshops and festivals in these regions. That, for example, was very, very crucial to the festival that I co-founded together with Diana El-Jiroudi, my partner back home in Syria. The support of the ITFA Fund was essential there. Now, in a way, if you look at this system of funding, philanthropy, subsidy, whatever it is, for arts and culture, something like supporting a workshop somewhere, everything needs to be measurable. How do you make sure that it was successful or not? You go see how many people attended, and then maybe you do a survey of what their immediate response or opinion is, and then you end up thinking, okay, it was fine. A mediocre workshop in an African country was okay, not bad. 20 years later, you discover that two of that region's most famous filmmakers today actually had their very first opportunity of working on a short film in that workshop 20 years ago. How could you have ever measured the impact of that? You know, so to me, it's always very deeply questionable to imagine that we measure the value of what we do, the impact of a film by numbers. That's how we measure financial revenue. But that is not how we can measure the actual slow process of having cultural and social and human progress. I say this because, to answer your question, I think the ITFA Fund is one of the main big things that ITFA brought to the world. There are a few funds like that in the world, not many as in less than 10. But the ITFA Fund has been very special amongst them for years because of the team and because of the way it works, it operates. There is always the director of the fund, my colleague Isabel Arrate Fernandez, and the team with her, who have a very profound understanding of the world and of the particular context of working in the Global South, for example. And it is a fund that is from Europe, using the European privilege, but is not Eurocentric in mentality. And to me, that is something that needs to be cherished and developed. There's so much more to say. ITFA was started 35 years ago, at a time where many other festivals emerged around the world. And I know many of them, and the founders of these festivals were very dedicated, hardworking, smart, talented people, like the people who started ITFA. Now, ITFA managed to grow tremendously, much bigger than any other documentary festival. I believe this is the real talent of the team, but it also is the relationship with the city, with the audience. There is an audience here who's really, truly curious, and there is a documentary film industry that is generally making films for audiences like them. So in a way, cherishing the same gaze of a European middle class that is on the left side of the political map, and who want to feel good about themselves, but also want to do good in the world, within the realm or the space of their convenience. And I think this is what documentary film has been offering over the past four decades, Western documentary film, but also imposing on others to make films with this approach. It just worked perfectly here. So the other thing, of course, is the third thing is the industry side. So the ITFA Forum celebrating its 30th anniversary now. The fact that ITFA initiated the very first co-financing forum 30 years ago also contributed, was a very, very wise design decision for the festival, because it also made this festival the unmissable gathering for documentary professionals. So all these factors made it great. My job is to keep being critical, to keep trying to develop this, and my job is to not lose, to be at the same time radical, but at the same time make sure that all of this success is not compromised. And that's what keeps me awake at night, because how do you keep being critical of the work you're doing, but keep making sure that it's making all of these people interested and they keep coming back?
Yeah.
I don't know if I answered you, Christina. No, I'm trying, but it's a very big question.
It is a very big question, but when you say critical, I think what's what the industry needs. It needs that kind of sharp eye towards where the industry, and I don't even like that word industry, but where it's headed and what compromises that is making for filmmakers' lives, you know, and how sustainable is that model for filmmakers. For instance, a lot of conversations that I've been having on the side with filmmaking friends is how directors don't get paid. They're the last ones to pay themselves. And so the model, this model of, you know, having to give yourself so much of yourself to make this film, so much of your time, so much of your energy, and it not be sustainable emotionally, financially. You know, we live in this system, we live in this world, and we have to operate in it, you know. But finding a way to successfully do that in documentary is very challenging for many filmmakers. So I think being critical is really important. And I'm wondering what kinds of questions are you asking when you're coming in as artistic director? What are those, you know, critical challenges that you're posing, whether it's from the industry side or even programmatically, curatorially? Is that too big? I didn't realize these were too big questions.
No, it's very important and good questions. It just really is the continuous obsessive questioning of my work, you know, of my day and my night. So it's big, yeah. I think there is, if I want to simplify, and I truly don't like to simplify, but anyway, if I want to simplify, I would say there are clear problems here. First is the paradox between a community that believes so much that it is the best, the most caring, empathetic, committed, engaged with the world, open, progressive in the space of art or artistic production, but being at the same time so bound to a very extremely populistic kind of capitalist way of doing business. So this paradox, I think, seems to be the curse that needs to be broken. So how do I think? I think, okay, we have the greatest forum for co-financing in the world, and that is where film teams come to pitch in front of a big panel, historically at IDFA, big panel of potential financiers, with 400, 500 colleagues observing, sitting around in a very big hall. And I have to think, okay, this worked 15 years ago perfectly. There are issues with it now. 15 years ago, there was real discussions there, and there was real money being put on the table for the films. Maybe that was a system that I don't see today. So we developed that into a different setup where it is more curated, where we think, for example, a bit about how the challenge for an introvert filmmaker is not massive. How could it be that we demand all filmmakers to stand in front of 500 people and present something that they already feel very insecure about? And if they didn't feel insecure about, they're probably bad filmmakers. So, but we don't care, because actually we are the decision makers. They have to come and put, you know, the effort. It's not fair, it's not true, it's extremely aggressive, arrogant even. So now I think the new design of the forum, the smaller number of curated potential financiers sitting to give feedback, and a more intimate space that some would think it's smaller now. No, it's not smaller now, and its impact is not smaller. It actually is only counting in the other, the filmmaker, as part of this process and not as the object that we have to come and put on the spot, all of us, for our own benefit. Then we launched last year in the next room to the forum something we're calling the producers' connection, where only producers are allowed into the room, and the whole idea is that they pitch to each other and they talk on eye-to-eye level as peers about each other's projects, discover that they can collaborate or not, advise and consult each other without the pressure of pitching directly to the money, to the people who can make or break their project or even their career sometimes, so that it becomes also about community, about being with friends, because it cannot be that we pretend to be caring about the world, but are doing all of these criminal representation disasters through our films, and on the other hand, dreaming of a multi-million dollars deal with one of the big streamers or so, and calling everything in our field by words borrowed either from a hedge fund manager's jargon, or in best case scenario, it would be from an advertising agency. So it goes all the way from what we make is content, the film is a product, we have to package the product, and then we have to pitch the product, and we then get the financing, and then we get the whole process in what we call the industry.
So that audiences can consume it.
Consumption is a key point, of course, a key word here, and then all of it is then automatically about KPIs and is about ROI. And then we keep going out to brag that we are the ones fighting racism and fighting injustice. And then good-hearted philanthropists put money because we need to have impact. And then the impact budget is bigger than the filmmaker's salary. And then all of this inflation comes from this paradox. And I think it needs to be grounded by remembering that we live in the real world, that we are not as good as we think we are.
Right. There is no purity.
I think the documentary community thinks a little too good of itself. I think the fiction people, the fancy snobs who make fiction films, have always welcomed colleagues from around the world better than documentary community.
Really? How so?
Yeah. If you look at the lineups of Cannes Film Festival or Venice Film Festival or Berlin Film Festival in the 60s and the 70s, even the 50s, you will find the greatest African filmmakers there, you will find the greatest Latin Americans there, you will find the greatest from Asia and Southeast Asia always present with their works, with their cultures represented and celebrated and then put into the funnel of Western distribution, of course, but they were always there.
Yeah, except for women.
That is a second extremely important point. But on the level of just being open to seeing the other, that was always happening in snobbish, fancy, prestigious fiction festivals that were always making fun of for being pretentious. If you come to the documentary world, it was always Europeans and Americans telling us stories about people around the world, not welcoming the colleagues from the other parts of the world. And every time we meet them, we feel like they're lovely, but it's underdeveloped and the film is not, I didn't understand. I need context. Mm-hmm. Everybody needs context. So in a way, it's part of the arrogance of our field, especially with the money focused in the US or in North America and Western Europe, that it's only when it's a film from around these parts that context is not necessary because everybody knows. You know, I used to bring the example of the fact that I never remember myself asking what's the context when I watch an American movie, although I don't know anything about the daily life of someone in Missouri, for example. I just accept that I don't know, and one film after the other, I start to decode the cultural codes, and I start to see where it's similar, where it's not, and to be able to identify with these people in a context that's totally different from me, I don't just say, no, we're not watching this, please go and make it again with enough explanations, because I don't have time to learn about your culture. That's basically what most of the distribution and exhibition system in Europe and in America does. So you ask me what's critical? I think if I continue now, Christina, my voice will keep on going up.
And I'll have to continue changing the levels of the recording.
I'm sorry for that. But I think there is, yes, enough. Mm-hmm. The same with our questions of women and queer people in this field. Suddenly now we start to realize that it should be obvious and it should be an organic, automatic part of what we do, that we should be fair and open, and that gender parity is not a great accomplishment of someone. That if ITFA is now balanced in terms of gender, ITFA does not deserve to be thanked for that.
Right. There's no award.
There shouldn't be.
Yeah.
There shouldn't
and
be.
And I agree. I'm sorry, I didn't realize it would hit a nerve, but I feel you sense all of the challenges that the industry is facing, and it's not just on you, you know, to solve these problems. But what I find exciting is that from a program, from a talk perspective, all of this that you just shared is somewhere here in the festival, you know, where the conversation that you were having with Laura Poitras, for instance, and challenging American exceptionalism there, and then also the conversation around what can we learn from queer culture, that, you know, so what I'm saying is that I just want to relieve some of the heaviness that I can sense that you feel from all the things that need to be addressed in the documentary world, in the documentary industry side, because you're making strides in pointing at them. So I just wanted to just give you credit for that.
Thank you very much. I think it is to me the only thing that I find meaningful is to keep talking about these things and not to be afraid of being critical and not to conform to the general preference that everybody smiles to everybody and applauds everybody, whether, and in a way discarding or lowering the value of our opinion because it's not about our opinion. This industry is going in two very extreme directions, like it's split. Mm-hmm. And this is translating into the design of our program, our film program here. We changed our film program to adapt to that. When we have international competition and Envision competition, and when we say these are both our main competitions, it's because there are two lines, two pathways, two trends, not bigger than trends. Trends is a smaller word.
Mm-hmm. We have trajectories, maybe?
Let's say, and in a way, we have a massive machine of economical machine that, of course, is focused mostly in the USA, but has impact and is also very much present in Europe. And that is making a lot of money out of a few documentary films. And by that, perpetuating an understanding of what documentary is that is deeply populist. So it is conventional, it is conservative. And that I find really important. It's this whole idea that form and content can be separated or studied separately, or whether they fit or not, that's a question. That to me is quite strange in understanding of the creative process, but in a way, we have the most conservative filmmaking approaches to tell us the most progressive, to give us the most progressive messages. And I think this is just hypocritical. If I watch a very conservatively made film about a groundbreaking radical person, for example, actually I believe the impact of the film is conservatism, is that it is promoting conservatism. It is not promoting the direct, measurable three sentences the character said in the film. What I take from a film is not the slogans in the film. What I take is my experience watching the film. So it is very clear to me from where I sit watching a couple of thousands of films per year that poor and underrepresented are rarely intrigued to make conservative filmmaking, conventional filmmaking language, unless they find out that they can change their life because a door opened for them from the north, where, or from the city center, because it's also about minorities in the north, that they can really change their life if they just conform. But if you look at the work they're making, they're not interested in making any three-chapter structure where the climax is two-thirds into the duration of the film. They're not interested in providing a classical build of the film. They're making very different things that the so-called industry is not open towards.
Right.
So, you see what I mean?
There's, I totally understand,
there is so much here that it makes me, for example, believe the calls for being a more diverse and inclusive industry are just fake. Because to be open to the other, you have to understand that the other have their own language. What we're doing all the time is that we are welcoming to the other at the condition that they do things exactly like we do them, and we congratulate them when they manage to succeed and make a film that is really exactly as if I made it. Structurally, artistically, you know, like in understanding of dramaturgy, in understanding of what's beautiful imagery, of what is good sound, but also what is engaging, what works, what doesn't work. So to me, this is reflected in the program of ITFA. When we say international competition versus Envision, this is what we're doing. We're trying to say these are two equal trajectories. It is not only about the Oscar. There is this pathway. The other pathway is invisible because it doesn't have all the media machine of the world supporting it, like the Oscars or the award season. But it is there, and those filmmakers are not stopping. They're making a lot of good work.
Incredibly interesting work, work that comes from a different place almost, I feel like. I was reading earlier today, he's on the jury for Envision, Kidlat, and he was talking about duende is the word. It comes from inside of you, your form, your style.
It is a very good example. Kidlat Tahimik is barely known in the West today. But Kidlat Tahimik is an influential, great artist from the Philippines. He is a great advocate of indigenous art at a time where there weren't many who were standing up and defending indigenous art. So I think having Kidlat with us is a great honor, but it's also to say we have to know, we have to discover and meet the artists of those spaces that we used to automatically omit.
Thank you so much for your generosity.
It's a great pleasure, I think.
Thanks for listening. Several of the talks facilitated this year during the festival are freely available on the VOD library on IDFA's website, linked in this episode's show notes. And additional Q&As with filmmakers featured in this year's Best of Fests section are available on docsinorbit.com, including Jimana Mana on Foragers, Shanak Sen on All That Breathes, and Jacqueline Mills on Geographies of Solitude. This episode was produced by Christina Zachariades in Brooklyn and original music by Naeem Mahboob in Stockholm. Special thanks to Anne Takahashi, Angie Obaid, and Farah Qasem.